Hi, everybody. Rob Brown here with this episode of the Accounting Influencers Podcast. And we're continuing with a series of debates with some of the top thinkers, influencers, experts in the world, talking about the future of accounting, leading the way, if you like, with accounting's future. We can study the past to dictate the future. We can also look at the present and the trends and the patterns to dictate the future. We've got a distinguished panel with us today. I'm going to ask all of them to introduce themselves one by one, so you can get a feel for where they are coming from, and we will hopefully come up with some insights and answers into what kind of shape accounting is in as a profession, what are the challenges and threats to it, and where it might be going, and whose responsibility is it to shape and brand the accounting profession. Jeff Gramlich, I'm going to start with you. Would you let the world know who you are, Jeff, and we'll continue?
Sure. Thanks, Rob. So Jeff Gramlich, I'm Managing Director with Validus. I've been in the profession for 40-plus years. Started at Arthur Young years ago when it was Arthur Young. Worked at Thomson Reuters for many years, as well as Wolters Kluwer, and then ran a business on Long Island called Accountants World.
Thank you very much. Pat Morrell, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. And Jeff, I've been in the profession for 4 years, so I think you've got a few decades on me. So I'm Pat Morrell, one of the co-founders of a company called iWin. We work now with about 500 IPA top 500 firms. We automate billing, collections, client payments, engagement letters. We're kind of like the back office AI automation easy button for top ranked firms. I'm a career software entrepreneur, worked in healthcare verticals and others prior to starting iWin in June of 2020.
Thank you. Yatendra Patil, I've interviewed you a few times. You have a colorful background. Tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you. So thank you for having me here, Rob. And hi, everyone. I'm Hitendra. I am with the Datamatics Business Solutions. So I lead their offshore outsourcing business exclusively for accountants. So we don't sell to anybody other than accountants. I've been in the profession for almost 20 years now. Again, work only with accountants for 20 years. So I really don't know how to work with any other entity other than accountants. I've been an author, published three separate books, one on client accounting services, the latest on AI for accountants. I'm blessed to be one of the top 100 influencers as recognized by Accounting Today for the last 7 consecutive years. Jeff Gramlich left one company on Long Island. I joined that company later. I bumped into Pat's colleagues, and I have met Doug and his dad quite a few times across multiple trade shows. So here I am.
Thank you. You bring up an interesting point. When I bring these panels together, I'm doing 22 of these. Mm-hmm. And so that you reach out to maybe 100 influencers or so. Sometimes they know each other, sometimes they don't. But the people that are the real deal, that are really doing it, that are movers and shakers, that really care, you tend to come across the same people. What's refreshing about people like yourselves is that you stay relevant, you stay current, you stay fresh. You're not just saying the same things that you were 5, 10, 20 years ago. And there is a little bit of that. Doug Lewis, great to have you with us too.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I guess we're really working our way down the totem pole with me here at kind of finishing things off here. So perfect. My name is Doug Lewis, director with the Visionary Group. All we do is work with accounting firms coast to coast, predominantly in the US, a little bit of Canada and Mexico right now. But from what I understand, the industry across the world is mirroring the same challenges we face here in the US. So a lot of this should be very applicable to your viewers and listeners, Rob, overseas. About half of our business, we do M&A transactions between accounting firms, buy side, sell side, third party deal consulting. And a bigger part of our business now that we're getting much deeper into is succession planning for firms and really figuring out how to increase the bottom line profitability of firms across the country. Majority of our clients are really in that mid-level to large cap sized firms. There are very few things we don't do for firms. Really, the only one I'd like to specify that we cannot help firms with is direct recruiting. It is a nasty game, and I want to make sure that everyone listening knows that we are not stealing employees from anybody out there at the Visionary Group.
That's great. Well, lovely to have the diversity in here. You may not think it's diverse, but some of these panels I do before you get any letters coming in, they're all female. It just happens to be the way the panels are convened. It's all random. You guys are all based in North America. Some panels I'm doing are all UK or all Australia, New Zealand. So we are trying to get an international perspective. But I'm going to kick off by asking you, and we'll start with you on this, Jeff. What kind of shape generally you feel the accounting profession is in right now? If I was doing this in other countries, We are getting similar trends and patterns and states of play in other areas as well. So it can be representative. What kind of shape are we in right now, Jeff, from what you look at?
I would say the firms are in really good shape, if not great shape. I've said for most of my career that CPA firms, by and large, have two kinds of years, good and really good. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, regulatory requirements continue to get passed and require help. New things come up. I mean, who ever thought any of us would have a global pandemic, albeit 4 years ago now, almost 4 years ago to the day, right? So CPA firms everywhere, you know, the Big Four said we've got too much to do. We can't do any of that. But the other firms took advantage of it. They helped apply for the loans globally. They helped, you know, track the loans. They got paid for that. They helped when there was loan forgiveness. So every time there's an influx of money that has to be accounted for, which is all the time, whether it's tax, accounting, auditing, the CPA is going to be right in the middle of it. So when I look at the top 10, Rob, just in the U.S., firms, their growth rate, the lowest growth rate was almost 15%. And you're talking on multi-billion dollar companies. That's a big number. That's a big number. Yep. And so I would tell you the profession, and you just go down the list, and some of them are even dramatically higher than that. And it's just, I think financially, it's in very good shape. I think they still got a lot of challenges, but nobody's hurting for work to do and to get paid for that work.
Okay. So the firms themselves, definitely the big firms, they're in good shape. Doug, you deal with firms of all sizes. There's a lot going on in your world. What kind of shape do you feel we're in right now as a profession?
Interesting piece that you said, Jeff, was financially firms are in great shape. I could not agree more. Financially, firms are making more money than they ever have before. We get pretty involved in actually writing partnership comp models, buy-ins, buyouts, all of the hard numbers aside from the M&A portion that we do. And I'll tell you, firms are making more money, have more money, are sitting on stockpiles of larger cash than we've ever seen in the past. And financially, great shape. When we look at talent, technology, consolidation, all these other pieces that are causing a lot of confusion and private equity, which I'm sure we'll jump into a little bit here at some point in this conversation, that's a little more murky waters. A lot of firms are struggling to really figure out their direction right now. And what we're starting to see, honestly, is the majority of the mid-sized and smaller firms, at least here in the U.S., are struggling to remain independent on their own right now, just because it's becoming a resource game. These investments in technology and people are just becoming so cumbersome to a lot of these firms to continue operating, even if they're doing well financially, that they're trying to figure out really where to take things in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Pat, if firms are making so much money, they must be spending so much of it with Aon, right? So everything's in great shape, right?
Well, we're not free, and we are premium service. No, we are. It raises a good point, and I would agree with Doug. I mean, we sit at the intersection of kind of client payments and firm growth, and we see cash flow, and cash flow is great. These firms are doing particularly well. I think the firms that are doing best, kind of the tip of the spear firms, are those who are consciously investing in not just the technologies, but the strategies for the next 5 to 10 years of growth. Whether they want to stay independent or not, it's, you know, inorganic growth through M&A. Hey, do we go buy a digital services group, or do we go buy kind of a smaller firm that's going to propel and accelerate kind of the scale of our CAS group? So I do think they have a lot of dry powder to invest in, whether it's kind of growth via software automation and enablement like an IWIN, or just kind of investing in their people as well. So it's an exciting time to be, I think, in any of our chairs, kind of in orbit of this profession. It's a really, really exciting time.
Etendra, what do you feel about the state of play for the accounting profession right now?
Yeah, so I would agree with everyone here. I do know that accounting, at least in the US, has been one of the most profitable professions for long, long years. Now, the situation is there is a lot of business out there, not enough people because of whatever gaps that are created. So essentially, it looks like there is a gap between where the opportunity is and where the resources are. So in that terms, the private equity, technology, and companies like us, the offshore outsourcing companies, are the ones who are looking to empower the firms to go and grab that business. As I ran Outlook 24 research on CPA trend lines concluded in December, 42% of the firms across all firm sizes said they're turning away new clients because of resource issues. And that's the gap that all of us, PE, technology, and offshore outsourcing are trying to bridge, because there are people who need accountants' help out there. They can't do it on their own. So accountants are so very needed, but they just can't reach all the masses that they need to reach. Right? So I think it's a great flux to be in.
Well, that brings us to my next question. I want to talk about the threats and disruptors to the accounting profession. We're talking about the future, and we will get there. Accountants have been going for thousands of years, and debits and credits and double entry bookkeeping and everything else. So we will arrive at the future at some point. The question becomes, in what shape will we arrive at the future, and how ready will we be for the future? So, Pat, as you sit there and look out, you're talking to accountants and firms all the time. What are they worried about? What are the threats? What are the disruptors? What are the drivers of change that you see that's making them feel a little bit uncomfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I think to piggyback on Hitesh's point, it's a risk of burnout. I mean, there's no shortage of work. It's a fantastic position, generally speaking, for any business to be in. Hey, we got more work than we can service. What does that mean? We need to expand capacity. So I think a lot of firms are thinking about, well, how do I do that? How do I stretch and challenge and empower and give more work to my people, but not kind of burn them out such that they exit the profession, which, of course, we've seen has been a challenge. So levers to pull. There's the outsourcing lever, of course. And then, you know, my vantage point is kind of the AI automation lever. Now, I think a challenge therein lies for firms. You know, sometimes that tech is kind of scary. And of course, our rally cry and I win is, listen, AI is not going to eat your job, but an accountant who's using AI can have a profound competitive advantage over accountants who don't. So we're looking for, and we are kind of waving the banner again for technologies that kind of enable the doing of the work, kind of AI that can exist kind of in complement and work alongside accountants. And it's interesting, I was actually at a legal conference, because again, I'm coming from the accounting profession outside of the space. I was in the healthcare space prior, and I was curious to look at what are some other professional services groups doing. So I went to a legal conference at the beginning of the year. And accountants may scoff at this or be skeptical. The accounting industry is much farther along than the legal profession in a lot of respects. And I think it's because my observation is accountants have been faster to be open to adopting AI and playing with tools, whether it's ChatGPT and others. And what I feel is going to be a really exciting differentiator for firms as we think about the future, those people within the firm and those firms strategically that invest in kind of those AI tools that can unlock and free up more and more time for people to work. Again, what do we all want? Highest and best use of our creative skill set. That's where we want to operate. That's what I think the most competitive firms are going to be able to do.
We're going to come on to what the good firms will be doing to future-proof, be future-ready. So keep your powder dry there, Pat. Hitesh, what do you see as the key drivers of change and the disruptors in accounting?
Yeah, so there are plenty that's different now in terms of what the business model of the firms is. So I keep telling accountants that connect with me that you've got to look at impact being your business model, not an output as a business model. And when that happens, they're looking at lots of things like AI technologies. And I keep telling, okay, ChatGPT is a third-party tool. But when AI comes within the typical solutions that you use for accounting, payroll, taxes, audit, whatever, that's when the game starts changing. And you need to look at that. And typical of the industry, when softwares are sold to accountants as well as to their clients, the perception of the client can be, wait, I can do it myself now with AI. Why do I need an accountant for basic things? It's not as easy, as simple as that. And that is where the accountants need to really manage the changing client expectations. That's something that I keep saying in every single talk that I give. You look at your client expectations, because they're also aware that AI is coming in a big way. Research after research is saying accounting or accountants are the most vulnerable to AI. But is that really true in terms of what is the impact that you're delivering? So if you focus on impact, that's where you should look at as an accounting firm owner. And hence, you definitely need to take a core look at your business model itself.
Jeff, you were very bullish to start with by saying it's great being an accountant. All the firms are doing wonderful and profits are going up, but they must be hurting somewhere, because with growth comes pain. Where do you feel are the areas that make accountants feel uncomfortable?
You know, that's a good question. I think they still, a lot of them still struggle to want to maintain a degree of relevance with their client in the right way. And part of that comes with getting rid of just lower level work, which these tools that we've all talked about and Doug sees in his business is really around what should we be doing? So it's kind of to what was just said in the sense of what is their model now and what should it be? There are so many things that they can take out of just not only at the partner level, but at the manager level and the staff level that they shouldn't really be doing because there's tools that can do it better and quicker and more efficient and more accurate. So when you break that down and you say, okay, if we did that and we could start to eliminate, does it accumulate up to where over time we can not maybe need 10 people a year or 20 people a year, but really only needs 3 or 4 because we've got it automated. I think we're going to talk about some of the private equity and the ownership structure. And when we get to that, I'll save some powder for that conversation because there is a huge opportunity to change this model. Pat mentioned a little bit about burnout and why is that, other than the obvious fact that, I'm working 2,500 hours a year. That's part of it. But there's other parts of it deeper down that can help balance that out. And I think some of this structure in terms of how they manage themselves is a big deal. So I think the biggest fear of change is fear itself, right? And accounting firms aren't good at one thing. So I talked about they're good at a lot of things. Making money is one of them. They're not good at change management. And they'll tell you that over and over and over again. They do not like to change, no matter how compelling, unless, Rob, there is a regulatory requirement. So if you think of this business historically, the things that got automated and jumped them way ahead of attorneys, and even in the older days, the doctors is tax returns. They were required to do certain things, and that's it, period. You didn't get a choice anymore. So that automated a whole lot of the business. And again, I'm old enough to remember when we were doing it on a mainframe, but that was automation versus doing it manually. And returns now get done in minutes. They used to take days. And that's just all part of this evolution. So if you have a regulatory requirement you can hold over their head, they're all in and they'll buy that solution right away. But otherwise, I did a blog 2 years ago on Sally. Everybody loves same as last year. Love it.
Well, Doug, let's come to you on this. Jeff mentioned relevance there. You talked about independence earlier. What are accounting firms struggling with, if anything, at the moment?
So I think that the overarching theme that we're really seeing the majority of firms, and this is sole practitioners all the way up to top 25 firms, we're seeing them struggle with keeping up with the rate of change. Everything in this industry is changing so quickly, and it's not just the technology aspect or the talent aspect or the regulatory aspects. Everything is constantly changing. So the rate of change is becoming pretty difficult for a lot of these firms to remain independent on. That's why we're seeing a lot of this consolidation amongst mid and large size firms. So there's all these problems out there, but honestly, Jeff, you hit a vein a moment ago that I think is really important. We're having a lot of firms come to us now, good sized firms here, by the way. We're not talking about small, strip mall kind of accounting firms, very good profitable firms coming to us saying, we are not professional managers. We are trying to run this like a business and we just can't do it. We are phenomenal technicians. We're great at doing the work. We're great at rainmaking, some of them, not many. But we're seeing people struggle to really shift to running their firms like an actual business. And I think that's kind of what, Jeff, you were alluding to a little bit there, in the sense that all of this change is happening at such a quick pace. We're seeing a lot of outside professionals being brought in to actually run firms in chief operating officer roles, CEO, president roles. And then, of course, private equity is bringing in professional management teams to some of these larger transactions throughout the country. So all of this is happening right now. I think the biggest kind of overarching thing when it comes to challenges with firms is keeping up with the rate of change. And it is just happening at such a rapid pace right now.
Let's dive into that a little bit, Doug. You bring up an excellent point on the ability of accountants to adapt, to be agile. Jeff talked about how accountants don't really change unless they're mandated by law to do so. But there's so much change going on, Pat, isn't there, at the moment? Technology is changing at a rapid rate. Firm structures, private equity coming in. So Talk to us about the conversations you're having with accountants and how open they are to change, how coachable they are, how learnable they are at taking on new ideas, new concepts. What are you seeing?
I agree with Jeff that regulatory change has kind of an imperative for kind of behavior change. What we've observed is the accountants that we work with are increasingly open to and, in fact, insistent on adopting new technology as a function of two other kind of inputs of imperative: client requests, and then to Doug's point, kind of professional management, whether it's private equity bringing in a true C-suite, or they're hiring folks from outside the profession, COOs, et cetera, who come in bringing kind of a cross-industry or best-in-breed view. My experience says that the client demand for technological improvement is arguably the most powerful of them all. I mean, many of our customers come to us because, listen, when we speed up cash flow, you know, reduce DSO, there's a cash flow benefit to what we're doing. But in a lot of cases, firms are coming to us because they say, listen, our clients need a better pay their bill, you know, sign their engagement letter experience. And client opinion moves mountains. You know, Doug talks about the rainmakers, right? They're really responsive to those big clients who say, hey, listen, you guys got to improve this because the firm down the street is doing it a lot better. That kind of feedback creates massive ripples that, comfortable or not, affect really dramatic change. So I think the firms I've seen take the biggest kind of leaps forward in, whether it's their general business operations, as they think about kind of just governance and rules of engagement around, hey, how are we going to improve realization, et cetera, or it's they're adopting really progressive tech because they're building a tech stack for the next 10 years. In large part, it's in response to some key clients or key cohorts of clients saying, hey, it's 21st century, we need better. And that's really driving a lot of change.
Hey, Chandler, one of the things that is changing slowly is the adoption of outsourcing and offshoring and getting in that extra capacity that firms need. Used to be back in the day, it was a really new thing, but these days it's more commonplace. But still, how good do you feel accountants and accounting firms are at adopting to new ideas like the kind of stuff you do?
It's definitely improved over the last few years, but even now, there's a lot of firms that have not done it. And some of those firms could be the ones those are really turning away new clients because of capacity crunch. But in general, offshoring and outsourcing is becoming part of consideration for even smaller firms now. So the awareness is absolutely at its peak in terms of what's available. The business models and the operating models of these offshoring and outsourcing companies have changed and evolved over a period of time. It's very mature now. It's almost templatized. You know exactly what to predict from these arrangements that firms do. So there's nothing to really worry. Earlier, it used to be like unknown country, 10,000 miles away, different time zones. How the heck do I, you know, get work done? How will I know about my data security things? How will I get the work of my quality that I need? And every firm rightly thinks so, that they're different than other 150,000 firms. But ultimately, it comes down to mature operating models now that the firms have. And you know, for us specifically at Datamatics, because we focus so much only on accounting firms, that gives us added advantage. When you cater to different types of clients, you're always trying to find a mean or a denominator that applies to everyone, and that changes the experience for different kinds of clients. So for us, it has been better. Most of our clients are growing after they outsourced to us. I'm saying most because some of them just came in last year or 6 months back, and I'm sure they'll grow. There are firms that do more offshore staff than the onshore staff. The onshore, I think one of the key things that I'm hearing from my clients is that the expectations of the staff itself at onshore locations has changed. They want better, more meaningful, more fulfilling roles. And by offshoring, the firms are able to give those roles to their existing staff and even attract newer staff, because now they're saying, look, I'm going to be impacting clients positively. That's my role. I'm not like an 80-hour a week kind of a tax preparer anymore. You know, so those things are all being seen. And as I said, more than ever, firms are looking at offshoring as a viable, necessary thing that they must do. The biggest thing, as somebody said, you know, the competitor next door, if that person is offshoring, what do you do? And in fact, some of the PE firms that are investing in CPA firms, they told me that one of their criteria is look at the firms that have not offshored, invest in them, and get them to offshore so that there is a quick return on their investment.
But look, nothing changes more than a consolidation, a merger, an acquisition, a purchase by private equity. And we're scared of what changes, aren't we? We have fear, uncertainty. So how do you feel accountants are adapting to the kind of things that are happening in your world?
I think historically, it's scared a lot of firms off. I think a lot of that stems, that kind of fear stems from bad experiences. So when we look at the private equity market, it's such a spectrum of opportunity. I mean, there are some well-capitalized, good people with great plans in place that are kind of making some splashes in the industry, and it's going very well for them. We have people in the middle that are still trying to figure it out, looking to get that first transaction done and kind of learn as they go. And then we have some funds, some firms that have absolutely no clue what they're doing. Even if they have a lot of capital to deploy, they have no plan in place. They're just looking to kind of make things happen and spend the money. So a lot of that fear, I think, stems from bad experiences. It depends who you talk to. And there's so many options out there. The amount of firms looking to break into the accounting sector right now from a private equity perspective has never been higher. We have, five to six firms a week contacting us looking for the exact same thing. New funds coming out of the woodwork. And they're all the smartest people in the room, which I love. And some of them are great people, happy to put firms in touch if they want to talk to some good people offline. Feel free to contact me. But I think a lot of that stem of that fear really comes from bad experiences. And you trust your colleague. So if your colleague spoke to a private equity fund, did not have a great experience, went down the line with them, didn't work out for one reason or another, word of mouth is probably the quickest way to make people afraid of anything, especially in the accounting world, because accountants historically have been a little more timid than other professions out there, to say the least, when it comes to change. So I think that's probably the biggest root of all the fear comes from just bad experiences and not understanding that the private equity world right now in the accounting profession, there are so many different options, different levels of investment, different strategies, different time frames, and not understanding all the intricacies can push people away from really exploring it.
Yeah. Jeff, you started off this conversation about change. Doug very politely said accountants are a little timid with change. We might say complacent with change. We know accountants have an elegant business model and money comes in every month, every year. Everybody needs an accountant. But what do you see in terms of their ability to innovate, change, and adapt to what's going on?
Well, if you think through the partner model, you know, this came to be post-World War II by a very prominent name in the accounting industry, a gentleman named Arthur Andersen, and, you know, created the largest partnership in the world, period. And that model stuck. And the guys that are closer to my age versus some of my colleagues on the phone, they're the guys that are closer to retirement, make the decisions, and they're making a lot of money. Yeah, so call it what it is. They're making a lot of money. So they don't necessarily want to change until they start to look at some other factors. And I think the big ones, I'll use BDO as an example. When they moved and took in some private equity, and they did something else too, which other people forget about, or it's easy to forget, they put an employee stock option plan or an ESOP in place. And this goes to what's different in the corporate world versus what's different in the CPA world. If you can get young people that are actually doing the work, and that may not be on year one, but it might be on year two or year three, some sort of feeling that they have ownership, that they have stock in it, that they have equity, that they're building some of their own personal wealth over time, that's a different conversation than just working hard and getting paid a bonus or extra hours. I mean, we used to have a saying that overtime ought to be worth halftime, because after about 60, 70 hour weeks in a row, you're tired. Whether you admit it or not, it's a different story, but you're worn out. Mentally, you're worn out. And so I find that those that really want, we're seeing more firms, to Doug's point, at the mid-market and smaller firms that are really taking this real serious. I've had numerous top 100 firms. I should pass them on to Doug and have him talk to him. What are we going to do about this? Is this even a good idea? You know, and the short answer is, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I even had a separate conversation with Barry Melanson about the old belief that it would impair independence and that, You know, we can't keep, you know, independent of our clients and our opinions and our rules in fact and appearance. And it was a very interesting conversation that's really not the issue anymore. Never should have been. It was just the fear of change. I think there's a ton of opportunity here for PE to come in. And one of you guys mentioned it earlier. I think it was Pat. And they can actually kind of demand a little bit out of that relationship. One of them is, I need professional managers. I need a VP of sales of tax. I need a VP of sales of audit. I need a chief operating officer to help drive back office as well as internal efficiencies. I need a real chief technology officer that when he says we're going to buy something, we buy something instead of going through a committee and we wait, discuss it. And then I figure out, oh, you know, paying Pat a little bit or Hitendra a little bit, that may take, you know, $10 out of my profit share. No, that's not it. We told the CTO, you've got a budget. It's $1 million. Spend it. That's it. Unless we have a mid-year, you know, evaluation or estimate that says all our numbers are down on the top end, then I'm going to have a conversation with sales. But this is around KPIs. This is around professional management coming in and saying, this old model has got to change or we won't have anybody that wants to do the work. And we can't outsource it all. We just can't. We can outsource a lot and we should be doing that, but we can't send it. We can't send all the work. The client relationship still has to be, and face-to-face still matters.
I want to move to your predictions before we get done with this discussion, fellas, but I'm just going to give you a magic wand for a moment. We're talking about a profession here that is doing well. There are certain threats and opportunities. And Hitendra, I'm going to start with you. What would you change about the accounting profession or the way firms are run, or any aspect of accounting as you look at it? If you could wave a magic wand and make something radically different or change overnight, and all the other three guys are really happy because they've got a moment to think about this, but I'm coming to you first, Hitendra. What would your magic wand wave over to make an instant change for the better in accounting?
Yeah, I think I would want the accounting firms to show the before and after difference to their clients.
Okay.
After I, as an accountant, came in, here is what happened to your business or your finances. Here is the impact, quantifiable impact that I brought in.
You don't feel they do that enough?
Yeah, they don't. Because if you take a look at all sorts of websites of accounting firms and the services they offer, they're simply defining them as bookkeeping, financial statements, tax returns, and all of those. Those are, you know, driven by the laws and regulatory things. Those are necessary. And a necessary evil is you always haggle with prices.
Yeah, they're commoditized, aren't they? They're not valued.
Correct. Right. And then people think, oh, if technology can do it, why do I need to go? So accountants have to define how are they impacting, and that's how they should be selling. That's how, I would be really happy to see on a website, hey, 67% of my clients see 23% net profit growth working with us. If somebody says that, fantastic. I think I would want every accountant to go there.
I'm reminded of the quote by Muhammad Ali, the boxer. He said, it ain't bragging if you've done it. It ain't bragging if you've done it. So if we could tell better stories. Pat, I'm going to come to you last because you've been steepling your fingers there looking very profound. So I'm excited to see what your magic wand will do. But Jeff, let's come to you next. If you could change anything, and you've seen a lot of changes in this game, what would you wave a wand over?
Yeah, I would tell them that they definitely need to look at their management and how they're managing not only themselves as partners, but also the senior managers, the seniors, and the staff all the way down. And when I say look at how they're managing it, what's the expectation? We know there's an influx of work at the end of every calendar-based year, so meaning January through April through the tax season. Right. There's certain things that we can do to not only shift some of that work, but automate that work. And then I would also take a strong look at how they budget and how they follow up with each other to hold themselves to a higher level of accountability. So it shouldn't take a committee to decide on every dollar. It really shouldn't. And so we've seen, and that sounds like a very vendor specific thing, but come on, guys, the meeting itself costs you more money then I'm actually asking you to pay. And when they get together and spend time on that, that's exactly what they're doing. And I think that their internal ROI can be significant on that. So I think it's high time we really look at the fundamental partnership model and we really start to take a strong look at driving it. Then I would think that when they're ready to recapitalize it or move some over to a merger, then maybe emphasis gets put on how far are you automated? How much technology have you deployed over the last several years? I'm hearing young staff and some that I still mentor when they're in their master's program and sitting for the exam. Jeff, I don't want to go to work for a firm that's going to have me do Excel spreadsheets. They feel like that's so beneath them, right? For me, that would have been manually spreading things on, 14 and 18 columnar pad and adding it up. That's why I'm still really good on a 10 key, because that was our automation back in the day. So I think that that's just crazy the way they manage and the way they decision spend within their firm. It's not like these guys are on their last dollar, but when you try to ask them to try something new or different or automate, you would think they were.
That might just need a magic wand, Jeff. I've just recorded an episode with Jeremy Clopton from the Upstream Academy, and we talked about best practice governance for successful accounting firms. And he struck a balance between the operational side of running a firm, which is what kind of coffee do we get in the machines, and those tactical day-to-day decisions, and then the governance things, the more strategic things. So, Pat, I'm still holding you dry for this one. You're coming in last, but we're going to ask Doug. Magic wand, Doug, what would you change?
Sure. I got to think how to kind of phrase this nicely. Let's put it that way. I would give the ability for these ownership groups to get out of their own way with this change. That's
a superpower ability to get out of your own way.
I would enable them to do this. Okay. Yes, because, and we're starting to see a little bit of this right now with kind of the changing the guard. Average baby boomer is 67. They're starting to turn over a lot of these businesses in the U.S. And globally. And the gray wave, the silver tsunami, whatever you want to call it, we're seeing younger leadership groups starting to take over a lot of these firms of all sizes, not just the small, but mid and large cap firms as well. And everyone is talking about this shift from compliance to advisory, like it's a brand new concept. And I love it. It's a real buzzword phrase, but we are seeing a lot of these younger leadership groups come in and actually take that to heart from a management standpoint and starting to diversify the services, which it's been touched on a little bit throughout this conversation here. We're getting away from the traditional tax, audit, and accounting service lines. Although those are still going to be our bread and butter, we're looking at acquiring HR consulting companies, IT consulting companies, bringing wealth management back in-house if we got rid of it or never had it before, really looking to diversify. We have some accounting firms that are interested in acquiring engineering companies because they do a lot of construction work, so they can bring that all in-house. CRM consulting companies, all of these crazy offshoots. We're really seeing a lot of diversification. I think a lot of it comes from the sense that in this kind of metaphorical changing of the guard we're seeing at the ownership level, the younger professionals are getting out of their own way and managing the firm in a different vein and in a more modern approach to actually running these things.
That's interesting. That's part prediction, part wish. I am going to ask you two more questions, guys. The first is, what separates the good accounting firms from the great in your eyes? So park that one. And the last question I'll ask you is, what are two predictions that you would put your house on over the next few years? So get thinking about those. But Pat, we've waited long and hard for your magic wand question. So what would you change overnight, sir?
We've been building this up. I feel like whatever I say is a letdown. No, I laugh because you asked the magic wand question to us. And when we started IWIN, that's the exact question we asked of other firms. So
in
2020, peak COVID, we had exited our previous business and interestingly had a top 10 firm help us on the transaction. Great service delivery. Several months went by, then we got a bill in the mail. So we had this really disjointed client payment experience as clients ourselves. And that actually set us, it's one of the data points that informed this accounts receivable use case. But when I was interviewing managing partners, CFOs of accounting firms, summer of 2020, I was asking them, hey, magic wand time, what do you wish you had that would kind of future-proof the next however long in this crazy COVID economy? And the answer they gave is the answer I would have given myself 4 years ago, which is a more modern tech stack. Because they were tethered to these, in some cases, legacy practice management systems they couldn't introduce, whether it's mobile apps for clients or just a better experience internally. And of course, for a year, we were figuring out how to integrate our technology with those systems. So we figured that out. So we waved that magic wand and we're good to go there now. What I'd say, current state magic wand, what I'd love to see is less technical, more thematic. I think there is a marketing branding opportunity within the profession, specifically around how it speaks to the next generation, not of accountants, of business leaders broadly. I think of myself as I'm a technology-centric entrepreneur, yes, but I'm a humanities guy. I'm a liberal arts grad coming out of college. I knew I wanted to go into some entrepreneurial business career. I didn't know what. And I spent probably 10 years banging my head against the wall, learning through School of Hard Knocks. What I wish I'd known is if I went and spent 3, 5, 10 years in an accounting firm, I would have gotten exposure to every industry vertical. I would have seen how the money moves through businesses. I would better understand kind of tax law. I would understand all these business fundamentals that are invaluable as a business leader, entrepreneur in an accounting firm or outside of it. And I think the accounting profession, I mean, how many times we heard, hey, there are fewer people entering the profession, et cetera. There is a real opportunity to speak to this entrepreneurial kind of group of folks coming out of college now who are looking for, hey, where do I take that first step to accelerate my career thereafter? I genuinely think accounting is a place to do that. And it's a real opportunity where magic wand to change the messaging, that can have a really exciting effect on not just future leaders, but firms themselves and the talent they could acquire.
Yeah, that's great. And the accounting profession does have a responsibility to bring in that new talent and make it attractive as a career choice. Okay, fellas, two questions left. Jeff, I'll start with you on this one. What separates the good accounting firms from the great ones? Not just in what you see now, but in what they will need to be, do, or have in the future. Where would you go with that, Jeff?
There's a commitment from the top. And when I say the top, that's more than one person typically, but there is a strong commitment from the top to not fall into the status quo processes. They always want to look at how do we change, improve, and better. I heard of a new title the other day. This is about maybe 2 months ago, 3 months ago now. And it's kind of a nice title for a project manager, but they call it the client satisfaction manager in the accounting firm. It's actually a paid, fairly high level position, decent paid position. And they're in charge of all client communication, tax, audit, attest, consulting, everything. They visit with the client regularly. They talk about where they're at on this particular project, whether that's just getting a tax return out. I say just getting, that's a big deal. Whether it's tax planning that comes as part of that, if they're doing part of the audit or they're doing other PCR type work, they're communicating on that. And what I'm told is the level of client satisfaction is through the roof. And they've measured it. To hit Tendra's point a little bit about statistics, they've measured it. What's your client satisfaction? What's your client satisfaction score? Do you even keep a score? You know, and that sort of thing. And Pat made a kind of an interesting, funny comment that Iwin kind of picked up on and maybe started some of their business thinking was, they did the engagement and then we went a period of time. I don't know if it was 60 or 90 days or longer, and then we got a bill. And it's like, oh my God, yeah, maybe even higher, he's saying. So the point being is, that's who does that? You know, when I buy something on Amazon, guess what? I pay for it right then. And guess what? In some miracle way, the thing shows up in a day or two. I don't know how they do all that, but they do. And we're all laughing because we know it's true. No matter where you live in the world, you order it, it shows up. So that's kind of an extreme on a consumer side the other way. But you got to bring that value together and eliminate these other tasks. So the great firms, they're doing that and they're constantly embracing change. I have these master's students that ask, who's got the best tech footprint in the Big Four? They'll ask that because they've done internships at two of them. So they didn't do the other two. Of course, I don't answer it specifically, but offline, maybe I would. But it's the ones that continue. I think Doug said it a minute ago, get out of their own way, start to look at it new, bring in younger people into the leadership and decision process. They don't have to be a partner, but bring them into the process about what are you spending your time and wasting on? Because fundamentally, they are still a professional service. But what they should get paid for is their business acumen and their experience across that industry and how to help them grow. If you're not helping me grow a business or say or become more efficient, why are you here?
Got it.
Okay, because I got to get a tax return done or an audit out. Okay, that's fine. But fundamentally, I don't mind paying for these other value add. And quite frankly, that's full fee or better. And it's worth it.
Yeah. Thank you. Itendo, what about you? What separates the good firms from the great ones, particularly for the future?
For the future, the two words, both are my trademarks, so I love talking about them. There are account tenures, entrepreneurial accountants, and there are people introducing themselves to me, hey, I'm an entrepreneur, and my business is accounting. So those are the ones who are doing better. And for future, they're going to be accountants, A-I-C-C-O-U-N-T-A-S, accountants augmented by artificial intelligence. So they're obviously going to be better than sheer accountants or even pure AI also, accountants augmented by AI. And those are the ones who are going to be really taking on or taking over the world.
Sounds good. It's coming. We know it's coming, the tsunami. Pat, what about you? Good to great in the future?
I think good firms put a lot of emphasis on, hey, let's deliver a great client experience. I think great firms expand that to say, let's create a great people experience. And by that, I mean great experience for clients, but on an equal pedestal is making sure life at work for their employees, for their staff, for their up-and-comers, for their partners is A plus superb. You know, there's a lot of, I think, indexing and talking around, well, how do we create like great client portals, things like that. But seldom is there equal emphasis on, well, how do we make the on-screen within the office? How do we do workflow? How do we do tax offer? How do we do billing? That's kind of de-emphasized. And I think the great firms we observe are those that say, no. They almost take like the Southwest Airlines approach. It's they prioritize their people. And as a ripple effect of that, their clients get prioritized as well. So when you put clients and your people on equal pedestal, that's what we see separating good from great.
Yeah. Thank you. Doug, what about you?
I'll try to keep it quick because I want to get to the predictions. I honestly, just from my own curiosity, that's really what I'm interested in hearing. I think good versus great. So good firms, in my view, they keep up with the industry. They're keeping up with the trends, the training, the development, the technical components, the client service deliverables. They're keeping up with everything as they should be. Great firms are looking forward. And I'm not talking looking forward 3 to 5 years. They're looking 10 to 12 years down the road. Whether they're trying to build something for an exit, whether they're trying to continue to remain independent, whatever that looks like. And the great firms that are looking forward that far down the road, those are also the firms that are actually making the investments and not just talking about all of these changes. It's really easy to say, oh, here's what the industry is going to be looking like 5, 10 years from now. Let's go back to continue doing what we're doing today. But the firms that go, here's what it's going to look like 5 to 10 years from now, here are the investments we need to make and actually start cutting the checks or making the hires or partnering or aligning with people that can help them get to those steps. That's the difference between good and great.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, fellas, it's come to that time. I'm going to send you to the casino and make two surefire bets. So what's coming up for accounting that you would put your house on? So I don't want any, I think this might happen, or we're going to see more of this. None of these wishy-washy predictions. I want these to be bold, brave, contentious, and you're willing to bet your last £1 million on these. So who wants to jump in first? Who's ready to go with two bold predictions?
I think Doug said he was.
I think Doug said he was interested in hearing all of yours.
I'm interested in hearing it all, but if there is no volunteer, I'll do it. Jeff, you look like you're ready to roll.
either way, Doug, I'll go or you can go. Either
go
way.
For it. Let's hear it.
So I think there's two things that I wrote down. I did think about this question and have thought about it a lot. I think the...
Well, tell us not what you're thinking, but just give us the answers, Jeff. We're just waiting right now for these two bold predictions.
The regulatory requirements and related are going to continue to increase globally, okay? And which means that the accountant is going to have to figure it out and keep that status quo side of their business going. Now, I don't think that's where their greatest value add is going to be. Their greatest value add is going to be in advising their clients on how to build a better business and how to become better entrepreneurs or more entrepreneur thinking in a well-established, very large company. So that's kind of rolled up into one. Two, I think AI is not only here to stay, but it's going to get expanded. we're going to see new ways in which it's going to eliminate a lot of the very basic tasks of this entire business level, just whether it's just getting, you know, basic parts of the tax return done, getting other things accomplished in the audit world, the attest world, getting some of the basic accounting done for their client, if that's their service. Those basic services where there is a business set of rules that can be applied against that task are going to get completely automated and done better. And you may have still a CPA reviewing it, but AI is a big tool. It is a game changer. And all the variants in which we're going to see that implemented by the vendors are going to help them on that technology. So elimination of those tasks, that's one. And then, as I said earlier, the regulatory requirements and the complexity around those requirements are going to continue to increase and get pushed to the accounting profession.
Yeah, and that's going to change the role of an accountant, I think, and the expectations of accountants from their business clients. Thank you for those. Two bold predictions. Pat, what have you got for us? What are you putting your house on over the next few years?
All right, gentlemen, it's March 4th, 2024, right? So 5-year prediction. So
here we go.
Let's all get back together in 2029. All right.
Yep.
Prediction number one, productivity and profitability will more than double in the next 5 years. And I would attribute that to a couple of things. And Jeff hit the nail on the head. I think AI and automation unlocks an incredible amount of productivity, brain space, reduces burnout. It just supercharges the economic engine of these firms. I think there's going to be an increasing demand for the services of these firms. And with that, and with the professionalization of the operating model as fueled by private equity, I think bill rates are going to go up. I think firms are going to be able to, rightly so, charge a higher premium for the value they create in the market. And I'm bullish on like the incentive model and the next generation of firm leaders coming in. I got really stoked when BDO announced the ESOP. We're a venture-backed software company. We have stock options across our firm as well. I love the motivating factor that has on kind of the next generation. So I think when you put all that together, kind of the economics driving these firms, they're going to double. On a more tactical kind of cash flow level, I think days in AR for most firms will go to basically zero. There's a lot of friction right now in the revenue cycle for these firms based on the billing model, how they deliver services, when they bill. I think the rate of automation and the way things can just streamline in the back office can mean a lot of these firms can become, you know, that Amazon model, right? It's like, you know, prepayment and subscription basis. I think that is pragmatic. So perhaps bold, but, you know, double and 0 days in AR, cash flow health. So.
Love it. I like that you put in a metric on your predictions as well, so we can hold you to account, Pat.
Keep me honest, Rob. Call me in 5 years.
Yeah, we will. Doug, you've had the right to go last on this one. So I'm going to bring Hitendra in with these two bold predictions and we'll finish with you, Doug. So Hitendra, what are you willing to put your house on over the next few years in accounting?
3 in 4 firms will have global teams. That's first.
Okay.
The second is clients will start thinking we want to work with accountants, not we need to work with accountants. So the impact that accountants deliver will become far more visible. And clients will think, it is better for me to work with an accountant rather than just do things on my own. Two things.
That's very good. And I appreciate your brevity. So I'm going to just give you a moment to expand on that first one, Hitendra. What will happen when you said 3 in 4 firms will have global outsource teams, however you want to put it? What will happen to the firms that don't or won't embrace that level of outsourcing?
They will have a lot of problem being profitable, attracting more staff to themselves, and investments and whatnot. So growth will be stunted for the firms that don't embrace this model.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We'll hold you to that.
Yeah.
Mr. Doug Lewis, you are you're having the last word on this one. Well, almost, because I'm going to ask you all as a final throwaway question in a few lines, is it good time to be in accounting? And you can put that however you like. So be thinking about that. But Doug, what would you bet your last few millions on? Surefire bets at the casino of accounting. What have you got for us?
I'll throw a metric in my second one, but the first one is here in the U.S., we're going to see, and I imagine this is mirrored internationally, we are going to see increased consolidation tenfold amongst the top 300 firms in the country at a rapid pace, faster than we've ever seen before. That's coming in the next 2 to 3 years. I do have a bit of an inside track, so that's a bit of a sure bet on my end. I can't you know, disclose a lot more than that, but the increased consolidation among the top 300 in the US, that's going to happen tenfold.
Just to clarify that, do you mean the top 300 might become the top 200 and then we'll bring in another 100 firms to make the 300? Is that what you mean?
Okay. Exactly. Yes. So when we look at the mid and large cap firms here in the US, that consolidation amongst the largest of those firms is going to increase tenfold over the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
And we're already starting to see it, but there's a lot more going on behind the scenes. So that's a bit of an easy bet. I mean, let's just call that one what it is. Second one, I'll go with Pat's method here. And I know you beat your head against the wall for 10 years, and that explains a lot about you, Pat, but I will follow your methodology. So 5 years from now, again, we're going 2029. Standard metric that a lot of firms here in the U.S. really measure their performance on is the revenue per equity partner. How much book of business is an equity partner or an owner in a firm really carrying or responsible for? That metric is going to at least double inside of 5 years than where it's currently at today. And a lot of it's due to some of the topics that we hit here today. Artificial intelligence, of course, is massive, but diversifying into different advisory service lines and consulting services, getting away from that traditional core compliance piece, all of this blended together, we're going to see owners and firms, whether it's still the traditional partnership model or a different model that we're starting to see a lot of firms move towards, owners and firms will be responsible for larger books of business than ever before.
That's fascinating. And a little shout out to your father, Bob Lewis, Doug, who came on our show recently to talk about Moneyball metrics in accounting and went very deep into that particular aspect of it. So that's a really good shout. Gentlemen, this has been a fascinating tour de force. I'm going to ask you for final thoughts on, is it a good time to be in accounting or serving accountants, advising accountants, helping accountants, running accounting firms? Jeff, good times?
Absolutely. I think, you know, as I started off, it's been a wonderful vertical. The vast majority of the people that you meet are engaged and passionate about that client service and what they do, and for the most part, passionate about how they fulfill that need. It is something that the investing public has relied on CPAs, you know, since the beginning of the markets across the globe. And I just think that as we see more automation, more tools like this, more different perspectives like this, it is definitely global. And it's a great time to be in the business. We see it in their growth and in their profitability. And I just think it's a wonderful profession. That's why I've been in it my entire career.
Well, Doug, we're going to need the visionary group, I think, going forward with all the consolidation. So I guess it's a really good time for you guys to be in accounting.
Yes, we can't complain. We're right at the intersection of all of this hectic kind of craziness that's happening. By the way, that Moneyball thing, that was mine. He stole that from me. So that conversation, I technically own all that IP.
Credit where due. We'll put the check in the post for you, Doug. But is it actually a good time to be an accountant with all the things coming up?
Absolutely. And I think the stigma of the traditional accountant, you know, the revenge of the nerds kind of boring pencil, put, you know, that kind of concept, that's out the window now. Accountants aren't honestly just they're not accountants anymore. They are consultants. They're becoming much more slick, much more appreciated in the business community. And I think that messaging is finally starting to resonate with people. Firms are making more money than ever before. The amount of work is never going to go away. And the regulations are only going to continue to change. So this is a phenomenal time to be in the accounting profession, regardless of honestly your age or background or experience in that world.
Hey, Chando, you've been in this game a long time and you've been passionate about the cause of accounting. Are you excited more than ever before about what's coming up?
Oh, absolutely. I think we were never more closer to the decisions that we all impact in the accounting profession. So from data to decisions, you know, data, automation, telematics, essentially, we're all going to be helping people make better business decisions based on financial decisions. And there's no better satisfaction than that. So the computerization pushed us towards a lot of data input, output. I think we've come a long way. The technology is now enabling us to create that impact from data to help the entire economy make better decisions. So I'm so thrilled for this situation that we are now in.
Yeah. Pat, yeah. You smile a lot. You're a very cheerful person. Are you wonderfully optimistic about being in this game?
You know, it's a bright and early Monday morning, of course. Yeah, always. No, I genuinely share the same bullishness and enthusiasm. I mean, the trust rating of accounting firms, the enduring annuity value of these firms is incredible. And that's only going to increase for all the reasons we talked about, you know, looking at, even at a macro level, an increasingly fragmented kind of skeptical society. There are trust harbors, safe places like accounting firms where people are going to go with their business problems. So I love Doug's point. It's not just accounting. We're, you know, consultants, advisors, business problem solvers. The future is bright.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would conclude by saying it is a great time to be in accounting and surrounding accounting, providing the players listen to people like you so they can get ahead of the changes and embrace the changes so they're not on the wrong side of the disruption that is going on, because times are exciting. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time, your passion, your insights today. It's been a wonderful discussion and we really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Take care.